Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 305. Greta, hidey, 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 hi.
Hidey, hidey, hidey,
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. In this episode, we will be discussing episode 2 of The Rings of Power, Adrift.
Oh, that's the name of it?
It's
Adrift.
Adrift.
Okay.
Catch my drift.
I catch it. I did not realize that was the name of the episode,
though. That is indeed the name of the episode.
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
I think I might know why.
Well, it's pretty clear why.
All
right. Hey, special thanks to... Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. Get them hands up there, patrons. We're waiting. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsh! Bam.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. Well,
did we not do that last episode?
I'm pretty sure we did it.
Did we? Okay. Maybe that one was just incredibly good and it just... was very memorable.
Well, we're good at the old air fives.
We are good at air fives.
Yeah.
It's true.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., and Scotchy Bobo. And a shout out to our newest patrons, Tom S. and Stephanie B.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
Welcome.
You, Tom. Thank you, Stephanie, so much for becoming patrons. We really appreciate it.
We do.
Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Your financial support helps the Tolkien Road to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way. Learn more at...
TolkienRoad.com/Patreon.
No. Patreon.com/Tolkien Road. I think you can actually go to TolkienRoad.com/Patreon, though. I'll have to put that in there to forward to it. But that was completely spontaneous.
I
put her on the spot, so...
That was... Man, I really thought I had it right.
Well, nice try.
Oh, well.
I'll do it next time.
Patreon.com/Tolkien Road.
Bam.
There it is.
Hey, YouTube, hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. Lots to say about this next second episode, so, want to hear from you guys.
Yep.
And we're going to have lots more to say about the Rings of Power over the next few weeks, so click that notification bell as well to stay up to speed. And... check out the show notes for my latest commentary video on the question, where is Celeborn, Galadriel's husband? I mean, where is, like, seriously, where is he? Pretty glaring. So after two episodes, we still haven't seen him, heard anything about him. Pretty glaring episode in terms of what Tolkien established, or I'm sorry, pretty glaring omission in terms of what Tolkien established within the Legendarium. So I asked that question and go into it in my latest video, and you can get that link in the show notes. All right, Greta, well, let's talk about episode 2 of season 1 of The Rings of Power.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So this episode, a little background, directed by J.A. Bayona, who directed episode 1 as well. And this episode was written by Jennifer Hutcheson. Now, I didn't mention this in the first episode, but the first episode was written by the showrunners, Payne and McKay. So two guys who are the showrunners for the whole thing, and they wrote that first episode. But the episode 2, so they're like involved in everything, right? Episode 2 is written by Jennifer Hutcheson, and Jennifer Hutcheson is significant to you and I, and to probably a whole lot of other people, because she was a writer on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Which, for those of you who are longtime listeners to the Tolkien Road, you may know that I'm a big fan of both of those shows. Breaking Bad, between the two, for sure, it's like my favorite television show of all time. Really love just everything about those two shows, the universe building, all of that kind of stuff. Of course, very like more realistic, obviously. Not so much fantasy going on there, but like just in terms of the realism, but really fantastic world building, in my opinion, within those two shows.
Yeah.
So it's exciting that Jennifer Hutcheson is a part of this show.
Yeah.
And
I didn't realize that.
And she's actually an executive producer on it as well. So, seems like a lot of involvement.
Okay.
She actually, one of the episodes she wrote for Breaking Bad was Salud, which is the one, and your one spoiler alert, if you've never seen Breaking Bad, or Better Call Saul, you've been warned, duly warned. But Salud is the episode where Gus, it's that famous one where he goes to visit Don Eladio, right? The Mexican mafia guy that they all work for. And he tricks them into drinking the tequila that's poisoned, right? And kills them all, right?
That is a fantastic episode.
Yeah, fantastic episode.
Ooh, okay.
So,
All right, so she's got some street cred.
Yeah, she's a serious writer. Yeah. Serious writer. Respect to Jennifer Hutcheson,
Hutcheson
for the work she did on both of those shows. Mm-hmm. All right, recap. So we're going to do a recap. We didn't really do this for the first episode because it was more just a general reaction, but we're going to do a recap of the episodes from here on out and just kind of hit the high points of every episode before we jump into discussing our thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, always, you're going to have to know this for every episode. Spoiler alert. Again, you've been duly warned. If you haven't seen the episode yet, we're going to talk about everything that happens in it. So you may want to watch it first. All right. The first thing, Greta, I almost forgot to mention this. The title sequence here. I don't think the title sequence was on the first episode. I don't remember it from the first episode, but I really liked the title sequence. Do you remember? You know what I'm talking about?
And
probably I really liked it because of the music. But let me just kind of show you here.
They say who's in the episode.
I'm gonna switch over to my screen here.
Okay.
Let's see if I can get to the right point. A little further back.
Oh, I know what you're talking. You're talking about like you were the yes. Yeah. Yes, I liked that a lot. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. So did I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway,
it was equal parts cool and creepy.
Right. Yeah. It was like it kind of. I really love the theme. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's Howard Shore that did the theme. He's not the director of all of the music on the show, but I believe he did the main theme that we see on the title sequence. And of course, Howard Shore was the one who did all the music for the Peter Jackson films. Mm. So and did just absolutely outstanding work in those films.
Okay.
I really like the title sequence, and same. I haven't thought a lot about it, but maybe one of these at some point I'll give some more thought to what exactly is going on there. But just overall impression was good.
Yeah, I agree.
And so the first scene of this episode is Galadriel adrift, and she starts swimming. Then we cut to Nori and Poppy, the Harfoots. And they discover the stranger, who apparently we're just calling the stranger for right now, in the center left, in the crater left from the meteor's impact, and they try to help him.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Bronwyn and Arandir, and they are exploring the raised village. Next, we see Eregion, the realm of the Elven Smiths, for the first time. Then we hear a conversation between Celebrimbor and Elrond, and Celebrimbor tells Elrond of his creative ambitions. Elrond then visits the dwarf realm of Khazad-dûm to obtain aid for Celebrimbor's vision. Nori surprises the stranger, who behaves very strangely. Galadriel contracts... I'm sorry, I'm having trouble reading my own notes here, everybody. Need to... Perils of aging. All right. Yes. Galadriel contacts a shipwrecked group of Atani, and they get attacked by a sea dragon, leaving only her and the mysterious Halbrand as survivors adrift on the Sundering Sea.
You mean she like comes into contact with them? She doesn't like pick up the phone, like.
Well, yes, yeah. I'm just.
It just sounds funny. Like contact them. Hello.
Maybe next time you can write the recap notes.
Okay, I will. Is that a challenge?
Yes,
I'm doing it.
All right,
I'm doing it.
Prince Durin the IV bests Elrond in a match of stone breaking, and we learn of their strained friendship of more than 20 years. We meet Durin's wife, Disa, and his two rambunctious dwarf children. Galadriel learns from Halbrand that orcs have been spotted in the Southlands. Bronwyn tries to warn the people of her village that danger is afoot. Bronwyn and her son Theo do battle with an orc. Arandir is captured by orcs while exploring a cave. What I assume are orcs.
We assume, yeah.
A storm throws Galadriel from the shipwreck, and Halbrand saves her life. The stranger shows Nori and Poppy a constellation they've never seen before. Durin and his wife, King Durin III, argue about doing business with Elrond. I'm sorry, what did I say?
Wife.
Whoops. Not his wife. Durin and his father, King Durin III, argue about doing business with Elrond, and Durin III shows his son something mysterious in a chest. My marbles are full of mouth today, can I say?
Clearly.
Theo takes up the strange broken... takes up a strange broken blade, the one we saw in the last episode, and a trickle of blood from his hand begins to reforge the blade. And the people of Ronwin's village depart after she shows them the orc's head. And then finally, Galadriel and Halbrand are discovered by a large ship, and an eclipsed figure beholds them. And that's the last scene of the episode. Mm-hmm. So
it looks like a very big figure.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's like pretty, covers their, his shadow, his whatever, the shadow covers them.
I'm pretty sure I know who that is. I'm pretty sure it's a Numenorean, first of all. And I'm pretty sure it's Elendil. Of the Numenoreans.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let's kind of go through, Greta, and this is just kind of open forum for both of us to share our thoughts on a variety of topics. So, you know, I'm kind of dividing this between, you know, we've got some threads established now, right? Some different kind of subplots within the overall plot of this show. We've got Galadriel and now Halbrand added in here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Harfoots with the Stranger.
Yep.
Okay, we got Bronwyn, Arandir, and Theo. Mm-hmm. That may be breaking into two separate threads because obviously Arandir and Bronwyn split up, not in a relationship since, but in terms of the scenes this episode. Dwarves and Khazad-dûm.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just kind of whatever we want to talk about beyond that. But really, there seem to be four threads right now, and I think we're probably going to be adding in, you know, more beyond that as well as the series goes on. So let's start with Galadriel and Halbrand. I have to say that I kept on waiting for Olmo to show up like a boss because Galadriel was adrift. Like, you know, here she is like on the Sundering Sea, just like completely out in the middle of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I expect most of you probably have some sense of like how, like if you've never, okay, let me just put it this way. If you've never been out in the middle of the ocean where you can't see land, you have no idea like how terrifying this would be, right? For any person, right? To just be in the middle of the water with no idea how close you are to land, right?
And to not even have a real boat.
Oh my gosh.
Basically on like a plank of wood.
It would be like almost existentially overwhelming, right? You know, if you've ever read Moby Dick, you kind of get the sense of this because of some of the chapters he has where he just goes into like, you know, the vastness and the blankness of the sea and all that kind of thing. But Galadriel's just like, cool, I'll start swimming, right?
Yeah, this is not my favorite thread. I'm ready for it to be resolved.
Yeah, well, I was really hopeful a couple of times. I kind of joked about that, but I really was. I thought it would be kind of cool if we at least got something like some kind of Olmo vibe going on. You know, I was sort of thinking to myself, like, because I thought it was really like just silly that she dove into the water in the previous episode in the first place, right? Like, I get that she like wants, she's like, she doesn't believe Sauron is done for, and she like wants to go back, but like, that's just super risky. And I think they could have sold it better if I think they could have done like an Olmo inspired vision or something like that. Right. You know how we have in the lore, is, you know, especially in the First Age, Olmo has a kind of, modus operandi of inspiring these kinds of visions into, various characters that cause them to do what may appear at first to be strange things, but they're like these prophetic little warnings, right? Mm-hmm. Or these like prophetic little words that Olmo gives them. And for those of you who aren't aware of who Olmo is, you don't know who I'm talking about. Olmo is the god of the sea, essentially, right? So he is the god of the sea within Middle Earth and the Legendarium. You learn a lot about him if you read the Silmarillion. Another reason you subscribe to this channel, because we have done now twice done read-throughs of the Silmarillion. So, and we're about to finish our second read through of it. And so you can get involved with those if you want to know more about kind of the deeper parts of the Legendarium. So, but yeah, like I thought it was a missed opportunity to like work him in there somehow to work what a term I like to use is numinosity into this, right? Just this like sense of like this, like, divine, like this mysterious presence, to work something in there that lifts up the tone of the show, right, to the level that we find within Tolkien's own Legendarium.
I think that's it, because it's woven throughout, right? I mean, it's always there, it's like an undercurrent, especially in the Silmarillion. That's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I at one point watching this episode, I found myself wondering who the audience is for this show.
Yeah.
because the word that kind of popped into my brain was juvenile. Like it feels very juvenile. Like not all of it, but there were scenes like I think the scene, and maybe, I hope I'm not jumping ahead too much, but I see
it's you're good. As long as it's in this episode, it's fair game.
Okay, I was going to say.
We've done the recap already.
Yeah, yeah. It's next on your list. So, but like when Nori comes upon the stranger and like tries to help him, and then he like touches her and there's like, whoa, like wind or something. Like, I was like, I'm sorry. Like, it was just, I thought that it was so cheesy. And that was like, that was my thought, was like, who are they trying? Who do they want to watch this show? Because it just, it felt like it was geared toward children. Now, which is kind of interesting, because I know like one of our big concerns that we talked about when we were just still learning about the show, we were concerned that they would make it into like a, like another Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah.
Which is the other end of the spectrum, right? But now I feel like it's, it feels juvenile to me.
Interesting. I'm not sure they've established a consistent, I can see why you'd say that for this one. I don't know that it's established that tone, and maybe they won't figure out exactly what they want to be in the first season. Maybe they're trying to kind of appeal to both audiences, and in the process, not entirely appealing to both. You know, the thought on that note, though, like of appealing to, you know, like not wanting it to be Game of Thrones, I felt like this series should be a pretty strong, like pretty strong PG-13, even bordering on an R, because even Tolkien says like the Second Age is a pretty dark age, right? And, you know, there are, I mean, it's a Calibeth, the downfall of Numenor is a, it's just that, it's a downfall. It's a tragedy. Right. So I think I obviously I don't want it to go to the level of Game of Thrones in terms of its kind of adult themes and violence and gore and all those sorts of things. I do think it should be a show that like families should be able to watch together and should appeal to children, because these stories, Tolkien's stories, appeal to children, right? But anyway, that'll be something that's just interesting to talk about as the show goes on.
It is. No, I just really appreciated that you mentioned that, you know, raising the level by including, like, you know, this divine aspect of it. Because I think that would, it would just, it would go a long way, I think, for making the show more Tolkienian. And just gearing it toward a wider audience in general.
The Sea Dragon. So, you know, interesting. I was a little underwhelmed by the Sea Dragon, just because I felt like it looked big and cool and everything like that, but we didn't really see a lot of it, right?
I didn't even know it was a Sea Dragon.
Well, I assume that's what it was. Well, I think they called it a worm, you know, which is usually the kind of the ancient term for a dragon, right?
I thought it was a really bad wave. I couldn't even like distinguish.
Oh, really?
It was. I couldn't even distinguish the figure.
Yeah, it was definitely a sea dragon.
I believe you. I believe you. Well, I started to fall asleep at that point.
Oh, well, that maybe just makes my point for me. It's like it, you know, it would have been interesting to see more. Maybe we will see more. You know, after they're on this, you know, rescued by this Numenorean ship, and maybe the sea dragon attacks, or maybe they do battle with the sea dragon and kill the sea dragon, or something like that, in a really like outstanding fashion. But so maybe that could be just that they didn't want to give too much away just yet.
It could be, yeah.
And like I said, you know, still no sign of Celeborn, and to more to that point, still no sign of Celebrion either. And really, we're in terms of where we kind of should be in the timeline, which I'm going to talk about, and that's going to be like a topic of every episode, is like timeline issues. I'm the timeline issues guy, people. But really, like, Galadriel should already be married to Celeborn, and she should have been married to Celeborn for a really long time at this point. And Celebrion should probably be born at this point as well. But
is that Galadriel's son?
No, that's the daughter. Right, that's the daughter that marries Elrond.
Oh yes,
and then Arwen is their daughter.
Gotcha. Right? Okay, yeah.
So, anyway, let's move on. You already brought up the Harfoots and the Stranger. You know, I have to say, overall, I really like. We talked about this last time. I do really like the Harfoots so far.
Do.
I do too. I think the actress they found for Nori,
she's fantastic.
She is really good.
She's so good. She's really so good. Cute too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm just like, dang, she's cute. Like, like she's just like perfect little hobbit person there, you know. But just like very, very like she, you can tell she's grown up, but she looks like a child. Like, yeah, I don't, it's just they fantastic job, and I like the way they're characterizing them so far. I got nothing bad to say about the Harfoots in particular. You don't sound like you were too big a fan of the thing with the stranger yourself.
Yeah, it's, that is just a weird plot line to me. Like, I mean, not necessarily a plot line. Like, I'm interested to see where it goes. But I feel like they're dragging it out too long. Like, we still don't know who that stranger is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any... What is your thought at this point?
I mean, my best guess is that it is... It has... I feel like it has to be some kind of wizard.
That
right?
was my thought, too. Could it possibly be a Valar?
I mean, the wizards, the Istari, are Maiar, right? So they are like lesser gods, right?
Yes.
But so could it be like, for those of you who aren't aware of that, Gandalf is in fact an Istari, a Maiar. He is a lesser god, and who, you know, takes on this particular form to aid the free peoples of Middle Earth in the struggle against Sauron in the Third Age. But there's no record in the Legendarium of him having been in Middle Earth in the Second Age, for sure. So my thought is that maybe it's a maybe it's another wizard that we don't know about, we've never heard of before. I really, really hope they don't try to like retcon Gandalf into this. I wouldn't put it past him at this point, because apparently they're going to do a lot of that, but I just wouldn't like that. I think that would be trying too hard, and you know, you had an opportunity to maybe go with something and come up with something new that didn't completely violate what's been established. I will say I'm interested to find out who it is.
Oh, I am too. I just think it's taking too long.
Well, one of our patrons, our resident bird nerd, John Rice. Shout out to John, longtime patron. Appreciate you. He actually he's done we've interviewed him before on the show, had a great interview with him about the birds of Middle Earth way back. I'm trying to remember to put that in the show notes. John had an interesting theory, which is that there are five, that were actually, cause you know, we talked about like how I felt like it was unrealistic. The meteor was like seen all like,
oh,
in kind
yeah,
of the
that
same
seeing it
perspective.
At the same time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, in like kind of the, in terms of the same perspective and size all over Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Well, John actually thought that there may be more than one meteor that descended at that time. So maybe there's, you know, maybe we're going to see more.
So
you
more
know.
Than one stranger, maybe.
Right. So okay. I didn't see anything in this episode that might confirm that, but I at least thought it was kind of an interesting theory.
It is
you
an
know,
interesting
thinking
theory.
Outside the box
I
a little bit.
I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, overall, I kind of liked the tone of the Harfoots and the stranger. You know, I actually was, it's interesting. You had kind of a negative reaction to it. I'm kind of like, okay, we'll see where this goes. You know, I don't have any issues with this so far. I'm very intrigued to find out who the stranger is.
Yeah, I am too. My beef with it was just more of, I don't know. It just felt a little cheesy at times. That's all.
Yeah.
Even like the constellation thing in the sky. Like I was just like, I don't know. I was very underwhelmed. I liked the Harfoot stuff better in the first episode.
Okay.
That's just my personal opinion.
I did think with the constellation note was interesting because, you know, this is obviously a male Valar. Or a male
stranger.
Stranger. The character, you know, has all of the characterizations of a male, shall we say. I was thinking to myself that if it is a Maiar or it is an Istari, maybe it's an Istari of Varda, right? Who is the goddess of the stars, right? The Valar, the Valir of the stars, right?
Yeah. That could be.
And that's why he was kind of obsessed with the constellations and that sort of
thing.
That's
a really good thought. Yeah. Yeah. I had thought about Manwë. I guess he's the, you know, over the skies and stuff, but Varda is more specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then there was the final note in that kind of whole thing with the Harfoots and the stranger where there was some kind of darkness or something like that was like creeping up and that caused the stranger problems. So I wasn't really sure what was going on with that, but I assume it was kind of hard to understand exactly what was happening, but it was clear that like something killed the firefly in her hand.
Oh, right. Yes.
And, and then he seemed to like have his power sapped by whatever this creeping darkness, this kind of dark mist or whatever was you know, coming at them. Mm-hmm. Wasn't sure what to make of that one.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find out.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bronwyn, Arandir, and Theo. So I have to confess, I didn't realize until this late in this episode that Theo, that Bronwyn was Theo's mom. I thought they were brother and sister, like older sister, younger brother. So that was a surprise to me.
They do seem kind of close in age, and I can see why you thought that.
Yeah, and maybe I missed something in the first episode that clarified that. But
yeah, I think you might have, because I knew that they were mom and son. But
well, it was good they clarified that, because when we see this thing with Theo, and it would look like it was either like a worm crawling out of him or blood crawling out.
I think it was blood.
Like being drawn out of him towards the blade. And I noticed that the blade seemed to be kind of like reforging as his blood.
Are we sure that was his blood? Because hadn't he just fought the orc or
not? That's what I was saying, was like, some bloody substance, some worm-like thing.
Yeah, but I was
thing.
Wondering if it was his.
Yeah, it looked like
belonged.
It was a wound from him.
Okay.
That was how I took it.
But I guess my thought was it could have, because he had just done, had he done battle with the orc as well, or was that just
Bronwyn? Yeah, that was both
he
of them.
He had done both, okay.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if it was orc blood that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was being drawn into the sword, or if it was his.
Well, I feel like orc blood, I don't feel like orc blood is like normally red.
That's probably true. It's more black. Know. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
That's a good point.
But it made me think, we don't know who Theo's father is, right? So, because apparently he's not in the picture.
Right.
So, who is Theo's father? And because if this blade somehow belongs to Sauron or like another evil character, then is it possible that, you know, that Bronwyn had some kind of relationship with some dark figure, you know, in the past? And that's, you know, so that's Theo's parentage, and that he's somehow going to play into, you know, this bigger role. So, anyway, maybe some foreshadowing there with the blade. Or maybe this blade is just Sauron wanting to draw life essence out of innocent people. Who knows? So we'll find out, I'm sure.
Right. Or turn them.
Yeah. The Arandir thing with him crawling through the caves and everything, you know, that was interesting. Fine.
Yeah, I liked that.
Not a whole lot to say beyond that. I'm intrigued by the whole relationship between Arandir and Bronwyn. I think
I
there's, you know, there are the couple of unions of elf and man from the past in Legendarium, which were brought up in the first episode, and we had one of our frequent YouTube commenters, Anerthil, I think I'm saying your name right, my man, he always corrects me on my pronunciation, so I probably got it wrong. Anyway, he brought up the fact that there are actually a couple of instances of like elf and immortal and mortal being in relationships that don't work out right at all, and and so we have
Legendarium.
Yeah, in the Legendarium. Oh, so like, okay. There's Turin and one of the lady elves of Nargothrond, right? And I forget her name; it's never on the tip of my tongue. And then there is who was the other one? I've already forgotten the other one. There are at least a couple of instances where there is no union, but there is attraction. Like there is, of course it's Andreth and, from the dialogue, it's Andreth and then, one of Finrod and Galadriel's brothers. And that's another case of like, where there's kind of the unrequited love sort of, I don't think that's the right term. Unrequited. I think it's love, attraction felt between the both of them, but it's never consummated. It never becomes a real thing.
It's like a Romeo and Juliet thing.
Kind of. Yeah. Kind of.
Okay.
So, anyway.
So unrequited is not the right word.
Yeah. Unrequited would be where one loves the other one and the other one doesn't love that one. Right.
Unrealized.
Maybe. Unrealized. Yes. Unrealized is good.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that particular thread.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that thread. I think it's good.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
It is interesting on, you know, that Bronwyn has a, you know, she was obviously, she has a son, right? Mm-hmm. So there was obviously another lover before, right? Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting little twist on this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The big thing I think that's introduced in this episode for the first time is the dwarves and Khazad-dûm, right? Go ahead. What do you want to say about this?
I just wanted to say that I love Disa. Like, I love her.
I think Disa's going to be a fan favorite. Yeah, she was. Oh my gosh. She was pretty good. She was pretty good.
She was really, really good. I loved her. And I thought they captured the dwarf essence very well. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that Khazad-dûm looked awesome. Like, it looked basically how I would picture it. The way he interacted with Elrond and the other dwarf, like, it felt very, like, real. I thought they did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
I still don't love Elrond, but we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Elrond has issues for me too, but anyway, I really enjoyed the dwarf episode too. It was, you know, cool to see kind of Khazad-dûm alive when you're used to seeing it as like this like place that's been destroyed and is completely mm-hmm. devoid of life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was pretty neat to see, you know, to see that playing out. I thought their little dwarf children with the heads running, yeah. the giant heads on them running around get out of my heads or whatever he said. That was pretty funny. So, you know, some good comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting note with the tree there, within his dwelling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. The sapling that was a descendant of, which tree was it?
Well, it was the tree in Lindon. And I can't remember which one that is.
They don't mention the name of it. They didn't mention the name of it. Yeah.
I'm not sure that that's actually from the lore or not.
Yeah, I was wondering.
It could be.
Okay.
What was I going to say? Oh, when they're riding the elevator up,
mm-hmm.
A couple of things I want to say about that scene. First of all, I did like that they kind of used that opportunity to set this tension of the dwarf being mad. You know, Elrond's like, well, it's only been 20 years, you know? And the dwarf is like, only 20 years? Like, that's a huge period of time for my life, you know, for my lifespan, right? Mm-hmm. So they do, you know, they do something to set up the tension of like the immortality of elves mm-hmm. and the mortality of all other, you know, dwarves and men mm-hmm. and Harfoots and that kind of thing. Now, dwarves, to be fair, do actually live a fair amount of, like,
they
live upwards of 200, 300 years in a lot of cases. So it's not like 20 years for one of us, you know, measly humans who, you know, get to 80 if we're lucky, mm-hmm. right? It's, you know, which is a quarter of our lifespan. You know, for them, it's more like a tenth of their lifespan, right? So, but anyway, you kind of get the point, you know, and you can see how elves might take that for granted in their relationships with other people. But it does disappoint me that they're not, I guess we're just not going to see. I think you could have done so much more with that throughout the series if you had stuck to the timeline, right? If you had tried to structure the show around a specific timeline, around the timeline that Tolkien actually gives. And one of their reasons for not doing that was, well, we'd be killing off characters, like, you know, every season. And it's like, yeah, but that's part of the deal, right? That's part of what Tolkien wrote into this thing. So the other thing I'll say about that elevator ride is there was this kind of attempt, and there's been a few of these so far, there was this attempt at like kind of a very Tolkienian dialogue or Tolkienian line where Durin says, a dog may bark at the moon, but he cannot bring it down. And I remember both times I've seen that because we had to stop the episode and then go back because, again, you were falling asleep when we watched episode two. Both times I saw that, I was kind of like, a dog may bark at the moon. And I'm like, oh, here comes some good Tolkienian dialogue. And then it was like, but he cannot bring it down. I was like, that's not how Tolkien wouldn't have written that. Like, it just didn't do it for me. I won't say that I can come up with what it should have been, but I just don't think it's that it has that like clever ring to it that you're mm-hmm. that you're set up for with the first part,
mm-hmm.
and the payoff just isn't there.
Yeah,
right?
I would agree with that for sure.
But he cannot bring it down like a dog's trying to bring the moon down, right? What? It just, you know, it's mm-hmm. like we set this thing up with the dog and then nothing.
Yeah, wah wah. At least they tried. I give you a C- for effort.
Yeah, that's being generous. No, but that's kind of what, you know, I'm like, but you have the time to write this dialogue, you know, can you hire like a dialogue person to improve that part?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it'd be too difficult to find somebody to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, was disappointing. That was disappointing. I want to see more good dialogue. I feel like more good dialogue in this show would really raise the level a little bit for me.
I agree. And I feel like you said, there's been attempts, and I feel like they've come close a few times. I'm like, oh, okay. That has like the distant ring of a Tolkien saying or whatever. It's just not there.
Hey, how would you fix it, everybody? I want to know from the comments below.
I'm trying to think about it right now.
Any wordsmiths out there? How would you fix it? A dog may bark at the moon, but... .. How would you fix that? How would you make that line better? But you're right. There was a line like that in the first episode. I think it was between when Galadriel and Elrond were speaking.
Yes.
Kind of going back and forth. I think there was something like that where it was like, oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So maybe bring in a dialogue editor to help out with some of these things. Somebody who's really, you know, strong on the Tolkienian vibe there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... you want to pay me enough, I'll be happy to help you out with it. So right here, you know where to find me. All right. Okay. Well, I'm not going to pass that job interview because I couldn't come up with anything right here.
Well, you just need a little,
but check the comments. You might find somebody down there.
There you go. Yeah.
They need to do that. They need to be like contest. Like it needs to be like, who can actually improve this line of dialogue that we totally flopped on?
That's an amazing
and
idea.
And like, we'll
actually
hire you for the show, right?
Yeah.
That would be a like great little sweepstakes or something.
That would be. That would be.
Well, so any other thoughts on any of these kind of four different threads we've covered here, Greta?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I really, hands down, my least favorite right now is the Sundering Seas. I'm interested, like I'm ready for that to be resolved. So I'm hopeful that will happen in the next episode. I know you had said in the first, after we talked about the first episode, that you thought we would get a glimpse of Numenor this time around, but we didn't. So that was a little disappointing. I'm really excited to see Numenor.
Yeah.
I want them to get there.
Well, I think everybody's excited to see Numenor. You know, that's I compared it, and this comparison doesn't mean much to you, but for all my Star Wars peeps out there, it's, you know, I compared it to like not seeing Luke Skywalker in Episode 7 until the very end. Yeah, and then even when you see him, it's like you like just see him and that's it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how these first two episodes have been with respect to Numenor.
Mm.
You know, it's like, it's almost like parallels because it's like you just see this guy who I'm positive is a Numenorean and that's all. You just see his silhouette, right? Against the, you know, eclipsed against the sun, right?
What makes you think he's a Numenorean?
Well, because they were seafaring and they were seafarers and I just, it looks the part of somebody I know is on the show. And and a character I know is confirmed for the show.
Mm.
And, you know, the Numenoreans were the great seafarers of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll be shocked if it's like, if it's anybody but a Numenorean. I will.
Okay. I thought maybe it was a bad guy.
Oh, well, good guy, bad guy, you know. If it is who I think it is, then it's a good guy.
Right.
Well,
right.
Who I think is a good guy.
Well.
We'll see.
Time will tell.
Who knows? Who knows with these Rings of Power folks what they're planning on?
Knows. Yeah. The only thing I think I want to say is that in the first, remember you said after the first episode, you felt like it was rushed. Like it didn't have, they weren't giving it time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode for me felt like drawn out.
Okay.
And a little boring.
A little boring.
And now I was like, oh, I'm letting it breathe too much. Like, come on, people. Let's move it along.
Well, you know me. I like it when Tolkien is a little more drawn out.
Yeah, you do. Which I'm not so much that way.
But yeah.
Balance.
Yeah, they'll probably find the balance.
I'm sure. I know. Again, it's still early, right? Like, it's only the second episode.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of show left.
Well, absolutely.
Yep.
So we're going to give our final ratings for this episode, final thoughts in this episode. Real quick, I want to hit the timeline issues. So according to our timeline, which they have the rights to, in Appendix B of Lord of the Rings right here, Sauron begins the constructing of the Rings of Power in the Second Age, 1200. Of course, And then in 1500, Celebrimbor and the elves of Eregion began constructing the Rings of Power. So even if we put this episode at as early as 1200 in the Second Age, there already arise some pretty major timeline issues if this person on the Numenorean ship is exactly who I think it is, which is Elendil, who is not born for at least 1500 more years, right? He's actually the Peoples of Middle-earth, the 12th volume of the History of Middle-earth, puts his birth at Second Age 3119. So that could be as much of a 1900 year gap, right, between where this episode seems to take place in the timeline and when Elendil is actually on the scene. Of course, we've also already, I've already mentioned a couple of times in this episode, the issue with Celeborn. Celeborn and Galadriel were married in the First Age. See my video for more info on that. So why would Galadriel not even mention or say goodbye to Celeborn? It just doesn't make any sense. So we'll have a lot more to say about timeline issues, I'm sure, as we go on. So there you go. All right, Greta. Mm-hmm. Overall score for this episode? I didn't ask you to do this, so just be prepared to do this for all future episodes, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I've been thinking about it. I think I'm gonna go with a I'll give it a 5.
5?
Yeah.
All right.
I was between 4.5 and 5.
Yeah.
But Disa gives it a 5 for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Disa for the win. Yes. Well, Disa for the recovery from below a 5.
Yes.
My score would be a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
So a little better than, liked it a little better in the first mm-hmm. episode.
It's funny, we went opposite directions.
Yeah, well, you know, we're both kind of hovering like kind of mid though. Like we're giving it very mid ratings so far, which is, you know, maybe it's just to be expected for a new show. You know, despite the many severe flaws, there are some intriguing seeds that are sown in this episode that have me looking forward to what happens next.
Yeah.
So, you know, people at this point, I'm just trying to treat it as its own thing, you know, and we're going to talk about the places where it doesn't line up with what Tolkien himself wrote about the Legendarium. It's a huge disappointment for me that it doesn't line up with what he wrote, but the show is what it is, and, you know, I'm not going to, like I said in the last episode, just take my ball and go home, at least not at this point.
No, because it's really fun to talk about.
It is fun to talk about. It is definitely fun to talk about.
Our discussions, I don't think, would be nearly as fun or interesting if it was perfect in every way.
Yeah.
Right? Then there's nothing to talk about.
You're right. And I will say that, you know, I think it probably, I will attribute it to Jennifer Hutcheson and her being a writer from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And, you know, probably the, you know, she probably learned a lot from the different writers she worked with on that mm-hmm. series and Vince Gilligan, who is the creator of both of those shows. And, you know, there's, I think, for me personally, maybe a little bit of that rubbed off and brought it up a little bit in my mm-hmm. estimation. So, you know, for me overall, there's just some big picture things outside of just the episode by episode execution that are causing me to start from a lower rating point. But hopefully we're going to get some episodes that I'm just like, that was such a good episode. I'll mm-hmm. give it a, you know, I'll give it an 8. I'll give it a 9, right?
Yeah, it's going to be an episode by episode thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, everybody. Well, hey, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes if you are listening to us on a podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or the platform of your choice. If you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on. Hey, once again, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a patron. What is it, Greta?
Patreon.com/Tolkien Road.
Boom.
Yeah.
You got it. Or, hey, if you want to do a one-off donation, just hit that donate button right there on YouTube, right? So you can leave us a little tip right there. And drop us a line. We love the correspondence. You got the comments below if you're on YouTube. And there's all kinds of ways to find us otherwise, TolkienRoad.com, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, or Twitter at Tolkien Road. Sometimes we even show up on Instagram and Facebook. You never know. So we will do our best to respond to you somehow at some point.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, he will, actually.
Well, sometimes you do, too.
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes I show you the things and then you respond.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. Yeah.
So all right.
We can use the royal we. It's fine.
Very well.
Yeah. Okay. Now that's settled.
Alrighty. Well, thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R.
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Jacob Lockham.
John H.
Scotchy Bobo.
Ms. Anonymous.
Andrew T.
Red Hawk.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
Julia.
Werty.
Matthew W.
Joe Bagelman.
Chris K.
Jacob S.
Don J.
Richard K.
Matt R.
And Garrett P.
As well as those celebrating their Patreon anniversary this month in September of 2022, Brielle A.
Dustin Q.
Johanna T.
And Robert S.
All right. Thank you all so much.
Yes, thanks
to our
guys.
Thanks to you, those patrons and all of our patrons.
All of you, yes.
And thank you for listening and watching. We'll talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.